Hi, I'm Ruth Lewis.
Hi, I'm Jessica O'Donnell.
Hi, I'm Monish Johnson.
And we're all at Northumbria University and we're going to talk about feminism, activism and social media. So Molos, what are the gender differences in how women and men use social media?
Well, what we see is that there are no real differences in the extent to which we are using the internet or social media in particular. But we see that there are differences in how we are using them. And one example of that is the construction of social media profiles. We see, for example, that especially young teenagers construct their social media profiles in different ways than male teenagers, because we see that female teenagers often use seductively posed pictures, and they try to look sexy on the pictures, and they choose the pictures that make them look good and beautiful, whereas men just focus on, well, just their face, but not exactly that they try to look seductively into the camera. So this is just one example of how we see how offline attitudes are reflected online, because of course we are bombarded within a society with beauty ideals, especially in the media. So we see that girls try to resonate and try to mimic these media representations. So yeah, that's one example of differences within use.
So Ruth, your research is about women's abuse online. What does your research say about it?
Well, we did some research which involved a survey of people who engage in feminist debate online, and we wanted to know about their experiences. Most of the respondents were women, and what we found was that there isn't a single pattern to the sort of abuse that they get. So what's been covered in the media is the really high volume, high intensity online abuse, and some of our respondents get that kind of abuse, you know, hundreds of messages every week, multiple perpetrators, really high levels of hate and threats of violence, threats to rape and to kill. But there were others who got much more low intensity, so they might get online abuse maybe once every 6 months, or they might just get a one-off message, and it might be individual perpetrators. So the reality that our survey shows is quite different from what the media coverage has been. And in terms of impacts, then whether or not it was frequent and high intensity, it was impactful. Very few of them said that it didn't affect them or that it was no big deal. Between a third and a half experienced really negative emotional reactions like worry, stress, feeling isolated, feeling scared online and offline. So there's no doubt about it that it has real impacts on women. Jesse, your research is about women's experience of abuse online as well. What have you found about how they respond to the online abuse?
There's definitely a lot of different strategies to how women choose to respond to it. Some may choose to directly engage with the harasser and essentially argue back with them, or they might respond with mockery, making a joke of the whole situation, showing just how little it's having an effect on them, which can also be quite effective. Again, it's a symbolic removal of power. Another alternative is to not engage with them necessarily, but to take the post and to repost them and share them so that other people can see, hey, you know, we're going through the same thing, which gives you kind of a sense of camaraderie, and it also is counter to any kind of silencing strategies. Just, hey, I'm going to show the whole world, and if you're very lucky, like one person got, your mother will see it, and you will get in a lot of trouble. And by reposting the messages, women can see that others are experiencing the same situations, which can be very empowering and can give each other support in that respect as well. And silence can also be quite a powerful option as well, because it's essentially not giving the harassers the attention and response that generally they're looking for.
Which makes me think that there's a sort of performative element to all of this, isn't there? There's a sort of performance of actually abusing people, which is often putting down other people to make yourself look great in front of all of their followers. But there's also a sort of performative element to women's responses as well, and that's also about rallying support and pulling together other women to say, look what's happening to me, look what this person's doing, and almost a way of creating kind of sisterhood online, you could think of it as. One of the things that we're really interested in is the connection between the online world and the offline world, because some people have suggested that it's the anonymous environment of cyberspace that makes people abusive, but we see it more as just part of the continuum of violence against women. So you could see cyberspace as another sort of vehicle in which some men choose to abuse women. And there are actually lots of similarities between online and offline abuse. And it's often about silencing and isolating women. So it seems to be, online abuse seems to have the features of it being about power and control in the same way that offline abuse is about men's power and control over women. So one of the things it tells us is that space is gendered.
Can you think of specific examples of how offline sexism is counteracted through social media?
Yes, I can give you some examples about Twitter because my own research focuses around Twitter usage. Well, there is hashtag everyday sexism. I think it's the most popular one. It has nearly 250,000 followers as we speak, and it's used by just ordinary people, just ordinary women from all around the world who expose everyday sexism. So a sexism they experience on a daily basis, and it shows how much sexism is still ingrained within our current society and that it's still much in evidence. There is also hashtag yes all women. It's also quite popular. It has around 60,000 followers, and this is meant as a response to the hashtag hashtag not all men, which was in turn also a response to feminism of men who were frustrated that they were trivialized in society when they were talking about topics about like sexual abuse. So the hashtag yes all women is a response to this, and the message is basically that no, not all men are sexist, but yes, all women are victims of everyday sexism and misogyny. One more example is hashtag not buying it. It has currently 90,000 followers, and has also been used to challenge sexism in advertising. And women use it to show objectification and offensive portrayals of women in advertising and other media outlets as well. And already some brands had to remove their sexist advertisements and apologize for what they've been doing. So it also shows that this can be really effective. I also heard about hashtag women are too hard to animate, but maybe Jesse, you can say something more about that, because I think that's more in the gaming scene.
Sure, why not? Well, the backstory to that is essentially a game company called Ubisoft, who are one of the largest companies out there, lots of money involved in this. We're making the latest iteration of one of their biggest franchises, and the options to create your own character to represent yourself in the game only had the option to play as a man. So women created, well, not necessarily just women, but people created a petition so that you could play as women in the game, and they got the response that the company wouldn't be able to do it despite their extensive resources because, well, what it essentially boiled down to is women are too hard to animate. They said it would cost them twice the animations and all of the extra voices, and apparently it's very hard to find a random female voice actor hanging around the studios. And apparently women work in a completely different way to men, so it would have been a lot of effort. Hence, hashtag women are too hard to animate, which is kind of what I was saying earlier about responding to things with mockery. People exacerbated what they'd said to a humorous level so they could kind of make a point of just how silly the argument was and use that to draw attention to something with a giant company who had already ignored the petition, but now they were essentially the subject of widespread media mockery, which to some degree probably made them pay a bit more attention than they might have done otherwise.
It makes me think that the idea that the online environment is actually masculine, if the default figure there was a male figure and they resisted having female images and figures online. Mm. What do you both think? Do you think that the online environment is masculine in nature?
Well, I don't think it's masculine in nature in terms of adoption anymore. So in usage, I think this was around 2000. There was a massive gender gap in terms of usage of the internet. Mm-hmm. Men were using the internet much more than women were. And some scholars also argued that male values were institutionalized within the technology, and that most of its content tends to favor male interests, such as the male-oriented pornography. But nowadays, I would say the gender gap is pretty much closed, and I think there's no difference in usage anymore. However, we still see that domains that are already considered to be masculine in nature, such as economics, sports, gaming, they are also masculine in nature online. So, of course, I'm studying politics, and politics has historically been perceived as a masculine domain. And we also see that this is resonated online. So we also see that in political discussions, for example, that men dominate these spaces. And a recent study showed that men dominate the online Brexit discussion. So this is how we see how offline attitudes are actually resonated online.
Yeah, well, I think technology is often seen as being quite masculine and patriarchal in nature because of its originations in fields such as mathematics and technology and other areas that have traditionally been seen as male. And in earlier, it's probably died down, well, it's died down a little bit, but you certainly had the attitude of no girls on the internet and big inverted commas here, tits or get the fuck out kind of attitude. You know, essentially, any woman who's on the internet, it must be a lie, they must really be a guy in disguise. Women don't really go on the internet. And I think that probably as a result of social media and Facebook, people are starting to realize that, hey, women are on the internet. So those jokes have kind of died, because at this point it's ridiculous to think that there are no women on the internet. But you still get the same kind of attitude of, it's primarily for men. And so to some degree, this harassment is an expression of how women are being punished for trying to carve their own spaces into it, or to break into what's being considered to be, big inverted commas, which obviously you can't see on a podcast, but to be a masculine environment.
So I think that, perhaps to sum up then, what we're all talking about is about how women activists and feminists are fighting back and trying to equally occupy this cyber space so that it's not gendered, so that women and men can engage in politics equally.
Yes, absolutely.
Based on your research then, do you think that social media is a positive development for feminists and for feminism?
Well, I think it's not necessarily a magical tool, as it's often been touted, because it's often regarded by some as some magical tools that will societies more democratic and decrease existing inequalities within our society, including gender inequalities. But what I do think is that in terms of politics, because that's what I'm studying, I think social media allow women politicians to circumvent news media and to counteract the gender stereotypes that are ubiquitous and taken for granted in traditional news media. So I think that social media can give women politicians, feminists and activists a voice and enable them to reach a wider public, something that was first exclusively in the hands of the powerful people. Mm. So yeah, I think it's definitely, it gives people an opportunity to be heard.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. I think for activism, there's a lot of potential, because it makes activism much more of a global front. It's so much easier to network and connect with people oceans away. Mm. And, you know, previously with activism, you'd always have the limits of cost and the geographical limitations. You can't necessarily pay the cost to get the train somewhere. You can't necessarily go that far. But also, as much as anything else, it provides a really good entry point for feminist activism. Something as simple as hashtag activism might be disparaged by some people, but we've seen just how helpful these kind of things are and how much of a difference it can make. And it means that just someone logging in on Twitter can see what's going on, can involve themselves just by doing something as simply spending 5 minutes reading what's going on, retweeting something, liking something, using the hashtag. So in that regard, it has really excellent potential for activism, I would say, even if only for those very basic networking and globalization functions.
Hmm.
And that's probably a good point to leave it on, actually, I would say. Thank you, Ruth and Marlies, for joining me with this today.
Thank you.
And thank you all for listening.